Hello again, subscribers, followers, and new listeners alike. With you as always, I'm Top Toes, and this is the O Those Toes podcast. And with us, guest hosting today, you may remember her from the last episode of 2021, the kinky darling of Twitter, the amazing Molly Cocktail.
Hi.
Hi, and welcome back to the show, and thank you so much for pinch hitting.
Oh, it's good to be back. Good to be back.
So wanted to bring you back this recording of all recordings because, and I know Instagram isn't your thing. You're there, but you're Twitter. You own Twitter.
Right. Exactly.
And I used to own Instagram. Until something recently called that's getting known as the Great Purge of 922.
Censorship.
Ugh. Censorship, and I think my best guess is an upgrade to the AI that handles their censorship.
What happened?
Well, to my knowledge, 10 to 15 people I know in our community, in the foot fetish community on Instagram, that I know of and speak to personally, lost the accounts, myself included, on the morning of 9/22. When you add to that the few people who had gotten deleted in the weeks prior, because Instagram, I think, always there's kind of a staggered rollout of different things, and different things that are available to people at different times.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was about 30 people I know over a 2-week period all lost accounts.
So you've been cancel cultured, basically.
I've been cancel cultured. The very beginning of summer, I lost my main page of 63,000 followers.
Oh my God.
Already had a backup in place. So that was around 16. Grew that up to about 17 in that three intervening months, which 1,000 followers over 3 months is not like the old days. Right. And then, boom, lost that backup page.
Oh my gosh.
Hemmed and hawed whether I was going to just leave the platform, because it's not a platform that likes us. And finally decided, screw it. This is still the platform we love. It's still the best platform for the foot fetish community because it's a visual kind of thing.
Right. And
I'm going to start at zero. But you were not the only one who said, come to Twitter.
Exactly. Because first and foremost, I'm so sorry that you lost all that content. And I know people that have been, you know, again, I'm more in the Twitter world, people who have had accounts that have been there for 10 plus years. And then they say, you know, one wrong word, or they post one photo that rubs somebody the wrong way. And the next thing you know, 10 years of content is obliterated. It's devastating for some people because people work hard to contribute to the social media, I don't know how you'd put it, but they have a voice, and they use social media for their voice, and they want to share, and one idiot can come along and take it all away from you. And it sucks because I get it. But yeah, Twitter's sort of the Wild West still.
Yeah, Tumblr used to be. And then when FOSTA-SESTA passed, they said, we're just going to delete all adult content. We didn't delete accounts. They just deleted anything that had ever been flagged as adult and said, everybody gets the exact same reset. Start from zero, and we're watching you harder.
It's such bullshit, isn't it?
It really is. And we've discussed it on the show before, but I think you and I are a little more educated in the law, you know, the mention of FOSTA-SESTA. And, you know, this is for American audiences, but not, because all the social media platforms are owned in the U.S. They're controlled by U.S. law.
Right.
And this law was supposed to curb sex trafficking. And somewhere in there, they threw in a badly written part that was trying to work with internet sex trafficking. And basically somehow, you know, sexual solicitation on non-adult internet platforms became sex trafficking as well. And basically it turned all our friends into prostitutes and me into a pimp in the eyes of the federal government. And each platform got to kind of look at it differently, how they were going to handle it.
Right.
And Zuckerberg buying out Instagram, you know, under Facebook and then eventually under Meta, with now the world's biggest social media conglomerate, he took the absolutely most conservative way out and basically put a hard no on it.
Yeah,
it's his right because it's his platform that's at risk. We don't get individually sued by the federal government. He, as the owner of the internet property, is the one who's liable. So right. I get it.
I have no love for Zuckerberg. Just, you know, the whole thing is so crazy to me because, okay, Zuckerberg's a great example. Okay. Like Jack Dorsey used to be the same way with Twitter. You know, these guys, they create these algorithms that, you know, aggregate and hold on to all of our data. Right. And they compile it into the big internet machine and they target ads based on the content that we put out, basically kind of brainwashing us in a way and giving us all those little micro doses of validation with likes, retweets, and hearts. Oh, yeah. And all that. And then they go and they do something like this. They're like, you know, we have the right to everything you put out there, but God forbid you say the word cunt. Like, cunt used to get you banned, shadow banned on Twitter. I don't think it does anymore because I've tweeted that word hundreds of times. We hopefully love that word. Hopefully to the delight of my followers. But, you know, certain words would just get you instantly shadow banned or banned altogether. And it's bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. Zuckerberg, you can't have it both ways. Mm. It's theft of content when in your case with
what
your
Zuckerberg just did for the theft of content thing, because you're right, he takes everything he wants or that the robots say he wants and exploits it for whatever. And so he threw a bone to the bigger people like me, where now there's all these different monetization options. I could make basically a paywalled Instagram account. I would not do that personally. But, you know, I got involved in the bonuses thing. So if I'm making content that falls into the algorithm of what Instagram wants, and even though Instagram is telling me constantly the content I'm creating is not what they want for their platform, the robots that control one side are not the robots that control the other. So the robots looking at my reach and my post interaction are saying, oh, we're going to incentivize you for creating this type of content here. And here I am getting, like, you know, micro pennies on the dollar. Of
yeah. You post. Get, you get a little vig. Absolutely.
You get a tiny little vig. That one, as soon as you accept it, you know, just reinforces the fact that he owns everything you put up.
Exactly.
And two, you know, for the people with larger accounts, and I guess they considered 17,000 larger, you know, it's an additional incentive beyond the serotonin of the likes and retweets and reposts and loves and comments.
Right. On Twitter, they have something now, I'm sure you and Annie have heard of it. If you haven't, I'll give you like a little brief rundown. It's called Super Follow. And I think Instagram does it too, but I'm not sure.
Like I said, that's the subscription based. Yeah. You'd create a second account on IG.
Exactly. You get this little special on your Twitter homepage. You get this little special pink button that says Super Follow. And the minute you click it, the minute a person clicks it, you know, they, in order to follow this person, they have to pay a small fee. And there are some accounts out there that use, they're very large accounts. They use that Super Follow and they're making a fairly decent passive income. But I have, for me personally, you know, my 25,000-30,000 followers, I don't really pay attention to my follower count. To me, it just seems like, yeah, why would I charge someone, you know, an individual user to follow me? That doesn't make any sense. I would much rather grab advertising revenue, not not make you know, a person on Twitter who's just looking to interact with folks and stuff like that. I would never charge them to interact with me because honestly, I don't really have all that much interesting to say anyway. I just, when I'm on Twitter, I just literally tweet the first thing that comes to mind. 9 times out of 10, it's filthy, it's disgusting, it's humor. But why would I charge someone for that? And furthermore, if I fear that if I ever did something like that, just like what happened to you, my content is suddenly intellectual property of Twitter. I don't want that.
Thing I felt is that I was then intentionally swaying the type of content towards the bonus, and in a way, I was giving up my my
sort your autonomy,
of my creative autonomy. Absolutely. Yes, but going back to the why, I'll tell you the why, because the why is easy.
Please do.
Back to Zuck and Dorsey. I don't really know the new Twitter owner, but you know, definitely Zuck and Dorsey all agreed: if you can't buy them, destroy them.
Yes,
that's been their mission. So, you know, Zuck bought Instagram. Then he tried to make Instagram look like Twitter for a while, and then he tried to make Instagram. Now he's trying to he couldn't buy, so he's trying to destroy TikTok by pushing the reels and short video with music, and really push that as the message of Instagram. So that he can destroy TikTok. And now both of them are saying, well, we're not going to destroy OnlyFans, but we can probably, between us and OnlyFans, we can probably destroy Patreon. And so what we'll do is, if we can push our people towards making, you know, OnlyFans paywalled content is porn, and they can't simultaneously say no porn and push that.
Right.
But Patreon firewalled content is whatever anyone considers premium. A lot of artists, whatever. If we can bring them over and tease them into our platform, which is faster moving and has much more reach, and say, oh, yeah, you want to paywall some stuff, we'll let you paywall some stuff here. And eventually, since this platform gets more reach, you're going to forget about and not renew your Patreon, and people will be over here.
Aren't they bastards? Aren't they bastards? It's like, the oh my gosh, the...
and they're hypocrites.
Yes,
because absolutely. They do know that they're drawing the same content they're telling us we can't have, and the same content they're closing our accounts for having.
Yeah,
and as I kind of said, it's a tale of opposing bots, especially in the Instagram world. Twitter, you talked a lot. We used to on Instagram talk a lot about, you know, some jealous bastard trying to get your account closed.
Yep,
that's absolutely. The way it used to be. But you would see that. You would see that with individual posts getting reported and taken down. And then eventually you'd lose your account.
Yeah, and there's, I think now, apologies for interrupting.
No.
I don't really know much about, you know, Facebook and Instagram, because I don't really use them much at all. But with Twitter, if we were to post something that someone found offensive, right? The thing that sucks is that it's totally passive aggressive. The person that is offended no longer has to confront the poster and say, hey, you know, do you mind? This isn't blah, blah, blah. The offended person can simply report the tweet.
Yeah.
And as abusive, like,
yes.
Or
we found that, you know, for a while, and I think the algorithm changed, but for a while, the magic bullet was harassment and bullying.
Yes, there's a couple different categories I think that Twitter uses for the, you know, the offended person, and I say offended in very sarcastic quotes. You know, the woke folk that, you know, you can't breathe without offending them. They can either choose from offensive, abusive, and bullying. I think there's discrimination, that's by race, gender.
Oh yeah, all your socio-political buzzwords.
And absolutely, it's fucking bullshit. Because
a year ago, I had a rash of, and that's how I knew it was an individual. It was the old days of individual attacks. I had a rash of posts tagged as removed because they're tagged as abusive. And I'm like, what the hell is abusive about a pair of feet in nylons? There's nothing in the description does not say anything, challenge anything. The picture does not abuse anything. This is just somebody knowing which button to push to make, you know, Zuckerberg say, oh, I'm not going to suborn that.
Right, exactly. You have the other side. You have the other group of people who were, you know, you post, like, just like you said, a picture of feet. There's a whole crop of other people who, you know, they're sort of vanilla-esque. You and I talked about this on the last show, as a matter of fact, I think, where people are just ill-informed and they see a picture, they don't understand, they know they're looking at feet, they know there's something sexualized or erotic about it, and because they personally do not like feet, they're going to burn you down.
Yeah.
And then there's the other group of people who do like feet, but they don't like that particular pair of feet.
Mm.
So they'll, you know, do you know what I'm saying?
It's, yeah, yes, the in fetish sort of micro haters, you know.
Yes, and they do it.
Annie and I have a reputation of being picky bitches in having made an episode of it last week, you know, where we critiqued some author trying to say what is a good foot, and we're like, well, one, nobody can say what a good foot is, but two, we definitely disagree with you. But we're not burning anyone down for it, except on occasion, jokingly, Quentin Tarantino.
You better not burn down my feet.
But we love Quentin Tarantino. We just, you know, don't agree with his taste in the feet. I know we don't. I've seen pictures of your feet. Now they've popped across. Yeah, no, you're in our wheelhouse for sure.
Excellent.
So Instagram has a fourth category of rival models. And that's the absolute, absolute worst. These are the people who think the way to get ahead is on the backs of others. If I knock them down, they don't understand a rising tide lifts all boats.
Right.
Welcome to the cliche hour.
You know what? I just a sidebar. I had no idea this is where we were going to go with the podcast today. I thought for sure we were going to, you know, we were going to get into some really dirty shit, and I was all prepared.
Oh, but, shit. Well, we got a whole second half after the break
Excellent. By the way, happy autumn. It's finally here. You know, I tweeted the other day. I was like, hot girl summer is finally fucking over. I'm excited to pull out my hoodies and my knee-high socks.
I had such a different feel with it. It was like the last day of summer was still 75 and warm. And then the first day of autumn, I wake up, thunderstorms, cold. I didn't grab a jacket as I went out to the train. An hour and a half into my workday, I find out my page went down. So it was just like, it wasn't the beginning of autumn for me. It was the, oh my God, we're going to smack you in the face with summer is over, motherfucker.
Yeah, that is fuckery from start to finish. Ugh. I hope your coffee was good at least.
I even want to say I didn't have time to stop for a Starbucks and actually had to get my coffee on the other side of the train, which is a local independent. I love supporting them, but, you know, just honestly, they don't serve a 30-ounce size, so it's just not enough. So you went at you said something about the vanilla people who understand this is sexual, don't know how they like it, and feel some visceral need to report it.
Yeah, and that happens a lot. It happens a lot on Twitter. There's a lot of, I always say that the porn Twitter, mm-hmm. right, which is the category, I don't know, I closely align with the folks that are, you know, very open sexually, that are constantly sharing not only photography, sensual and erotic photography, but we're also just opening new doors and talking about their life in terms of their sexuality, their kinks, etc. And some of them have, you know, I would consider some pretty strong kinks, and they're, you know, we're talking like the folks that are into heavy impact play, that are into like really, really hard shibari, And some of those pictures that they post, you know, you see the women when they're in aftercare, for example. So you see that their skin is bruised or there may be some blood, right? Not because their dom hurt them. That's just part and parcel of that type of kink play. And, you know, your kink is not my kink, but we respect each other. But there are some people that will report that as abuse.
That kink freaks out the straights. Absolutely.
Yes. And you know, you can explain up, down, and sideways to these people that these are two adults. There is full consent. There are safety measures in place.
Yeah. Like, I wish there was a way to basically have, like, you remember your old checkbox, FetLife still does it. In posting this, I state that, you know, this is my picture. I have the right to use the picture, and everything is consented.
Yeah.
I wish that social media had the safe, sane, and consensual checkbox so that you could, in posting this, listen, I have the rights to use this picture. Everyone in this picture is over 21.
Yep.
And anything depicted in this picture is safe, sane, and consensual.
Absolutely. I know they still do that.
If Zuckerberg's listening, this is what we want.
Exactly.
This is how Hello. You deal
with it. Hello, social media gods. Yeah, because, you know, the only social media site I know of that still does that is FetLife.
It's FetLife, yeah. And I love FetLife. It's a rabbit hole. And I therefore neglect our FetLife for the... because so much of where we come from is out of Instagram, I always hate to, like, do you also have something we could put on our FetLife that's maybe a little racier? It's hard to ask the guests for that.
Exactly.
Because it feels like you're just kind of begging for free porn.
I can't. I was on FetLife. I had an account there for, I don't know, maybe 4 years. I deactivated it back in November. Not because I found anything, you know, unsavory there, actually, in terms of what they allow and the freedom that you have there is great. I love that. But mm-hmm. I was having more of just a not feeling like I kind of fit in there anymore, because as much as I love the kink scene and as much as I love, you know, getting into like weird and crazy things, it just, there's a lack of intimacy. And for demisexuals and sapiosexuals, which I'm both, we need the intimacy to make the kink work, and it's really difficult in any social media setting.
And then I know a lot of people
to make that connection.
You know, the gross guy in your DM is amplified 1,000 times on life.
Yes. You know, I got funny that you mentioned DMs, because there's a whole shitload of that on Twitter where, you know, the women of Twitter would tell you, particularly the very attractive ones, they get inundated with random DMs from what we call reply guys, right? These are just guys who are looking to troll, or guys who are just think you have a pretty face and they want to jizz on it. Nothing wrong with jizzing on a face.
But I don't need to be told about it.
Exactly. Go for it. So they will inundate, and I got into this thing because I got so many DMs that were really starting to go borderline offensive with the things that people were saying. I'm like, how can I turn this on my head and make it a little more empowering and a little bit more fun and safe, particularly for women? I started recording, like reading their DMs out loud and recording it and then posting it on Twitter.
Annie and I did that many, many years back.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Pre-FOSTA, the page lasted a week, but we created an independent page where we would take and harassingly rate the dick pics we were sent in our DMs.
Yes.
And our friends were too.
Yeah.
That's kind of awful on our part, and probably Instagram was right to take that page down, but it was fucking hysterical.
I think it's only fair. I mean, if a person is going,
I don't know, but like, you know, posting it with a caption of "I'm not sure this shade of yellow is healthy. You should see a doctor."
I mean, in mine were, you know, I would get a shitload of dick pics, but and obviously I can't, you can't share those in an audio tweet. So I always selected the ones where the, you know, the person writes something and they write something ridiculous. And my,
Oh, the amount of times I've been called sexy princess.
yes, my favorite thing to do, you know, is just insult their grammar because these people have like zero sentence structure and everything. And it's, I just thought it was a funny, and I actually had like, I would call like a mini show because I've done like 20 of these tweets. And it would just be Molly reads her unsolicited
Oh
DMs.
yeah,
And
it kind of reminds me of the nighttime host, NBC, I think is, and he came out of Saturday Night Live, and he had a little bit where he would get people on, celebrities read the mean tweets to themselves.
oh, Jimmy Kimmel, yeah, that
Yeah,
is
it was Kimmel.
hilarious. It's
I was for some
hilarious.
reason I was thinking Fallon, but you're right, it's Kimmel.
Yeah, it's Jimmy Kimmel. And the I mean, I feel the same way about mean tweets as I feel about like reading, you know, the unsolicited DMs. The reality is, if you're going to put yourself out there, if you're a celebrity, you're an actor, you are in the public domain. Your right to privacy is pretty much out the door, right? So you gotta take the bad with the good. You got millions of dollars, so you can cry your eyes on those $100 bills while I insult you. But the reply guys, if you're gonna send unsolicited dick pics to every pretty girl on Twitter, be prepared that some of us are gonna push back and we're gonna humiliate you, like you're trying. You know, not that they're trying to humiliate us, but there's some things you just don't
They
want to
are
see.
being, they are being invasive. They are being insulting, not
Yes.
assaultive.
Right.
But
It's
it is
presumptive.
funny how much you and I are sort of the same mind sometimes.
It's terrifying. It's
Because
terrifying.
where you did the unsolicited DMs, and especially the ones of terrible grammar, what I started doing, and I realized my audience is wrong. It needed a 45 plus audience to really be appreciated, but I would take the exact wording, or maybe even like a screen grab of these DMs of amazing mutation of the English language and ridiculous content, and use them to caption Latke Gravas from the old TV show Taxi.
Oh my God,
And
that
when
is
you see, if you
brilliant.
know who
That is
Latke
brilliant.
is and you read it that way, it was
Yes.
hysterical. But the millennials, unfortunately, have never watched Taxi, so they totally don't get what that character
Oh
is.
man, that is brilliant. That is fucking brilliant. Yeah, AI. Gen Z's. They have
There's a
no
lot of
idea.
great ones, but yeah, they
They
don't
have no idea how much
understand.
fun it was for us growing up. You know, we had
Oh
no.
yeah, you got to throw on something called Antenna TV from time to time. It's
Exactly.
a
What do
television network that runs shows left over from the 50s through
we
the early 80s from like the classic sitcom era.
do?
And
Nice.
yes, this
Nice.
is what we lived on, and we look back at it and we're like, ooh, some of this doesn't fly anymore, but oh God, we lived in a
It's
different time.
amazing, isn't it? Like, what was the name of the thing when we first got cable? I'm sure, Top, you remember this. You had a box with a cord leading to, it was like a little brown box with
Oh, the
black
brown
buttons.
box with the three position, it had like
The
11
3-position
switches
switch.
and a three position switch. So you got a grand total of, oh my God, you had 33 channels available to you.
Exactly. Remember that? That was baller.
Yeah,
If
and no
you
remote
had
control to it.
that,
You still
yeah.
had to set, I was the grandchild because it was my grandparents who got cable before my parents. So the grandchild, I was the remote. Get up and change the thing to 22C. Like, okay, button 22, position selector C. And
Yep,
like,
yep.
okay, you know, it's like Mission Impossible to get this thing done, and then you back away and you're like, the golf channel, grandma.
You were like, you know, if you had that, because me growing up, like we were, Christ, I think we were the first on our block that got cable. My dad was insistent on it.
Oh, it was the opposite. I didn't have cable until I came back from college.
Oh wow. Oh wow. Yeah, like I remember the first time, like Christ, I remember the night that MTV premiered. And that is because my older sister, she's 10 years older than me. She had all her high school friends over because we had cable, right?
To see Kurt Loder for the first time.
Exactly. And they were, you know, we had one of those big sectional sofas in the living room. So it was her, you know, and like 10 other girls from her high school and like two dudes, and they're all just cramped around. I think our television was 15 inches.
There was literally a hole in the ozone layer over your house that night for the hairspray of 10.
You are not kidding, girls. Because every one of those fucking girls had hair that was indescribable and indestructible, and they all had like a big ass can, the big aluminum cans of Aquanet in their purses, and they, you know, at commercial breaks they would use a plastic pick and make sure that the hair was teased just so.
I do love the fashion though, because all of them would have been in tight like Levi's 501 80s jeans, pumps and fishnet socks or pantyhose things of that nature. That was definitely formative in my
That's what the millennials and the Gen Zs and the Gen Ys or whatever the hell they're called. I call them the woke generation.
Just remember, we are bigger fish in a social media world, but social media is their world. So we do have to love and respect them.
It is, but Gen X did it better.
We did everything better. Social media, it would be like .com. It would be gofuckyourself.org.
Exactly. It would be eatabagofdicks.com or meh, M-E-H. That's, you know, meh.com. That would be my speed, but...
People ask Gen X, like, why aren't you politically involved? And like, we grew up thinking that the world was going to be exploded by now. We didn't expect to be here.
Exactly. Like, they, you know, I a while ago, I said something on Twitter about civil defense drills. And it felt like there was only about 10 people that knew what I was talking about. You know, the duck and cover, hide under your desk.
Or jokingly, the position of bend over and kiss your ass goodbye.
Exactly. Because, you know, in 1985, when you and I are sitting in our fourth or fifth grade classroom, whatever, wherever where the hell we were, you know, we were convinced that Russia was going to nuke us.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so weird because we're right back there, aren't we?
Gorby was going to push the button, or Ronnie was going to think Gorby pushed the button and it was actually a jelly bean, and then he was going to push the button. Yeah, exactly. And now we've got Putin threatening to push the button.
Yes, and we are right back in, it's like we're right back in the 80s again with...
We survived Donnie thinking that he wanted to have a button installed in the toilet just in case. So, and now we got Putin. So why don't we take a quick break here, hear from a sponsor, and maybe when we get back, we can catch back up to this century and what we're talking about.
I love where this is going though. I got to be honest.
All right. Quick break and we'll pick it back up.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. And I didn't grow up on podcasts, as we were talking about age. I grew up on morning talk radio. And so I always have this tendency to say, and this is, you know, reintroduce the guest if you're just joining us. But podcasts are linear. You can't be just joining us in the middle.
True.
But it's where I come from, and I always want to do it. The other reason is there's always a little bit of side conversation off the air with guests that, you know, like you kind of want to find a way to segue into, which doesn't work because it was not on the air.
Right. And we were gabbing.
We do. So we were discussing the Greatest Generation.
Yeah, we were talking about Gen X and the Greatest Generation, Gen X, absolutely. And the the eternal fear that we felt of World War III. It was unstoppable, and how everything that happened then is happening now with Russia, you know, being terrifying again, and Kate Bush being on top of the top 40. She's back on the charts with the
because of
Stranger Things.
It's so beautifully nostalgic, and yet
it is
terrifying again.
I know.
And the other one, here we go. Here's the perfect segue. So 1981, beautiful little almost independent film starring a world bodybuilding champion called The Terminator.
Giving us
the fear that AI will take over the world.
He wasn't wrong. They weren't wrong.
They weren't wrong, except for the fact that our AIs are stupid.
AI is not nearly as cool as Skynet.
No. Skynet realized that the entire human race needed to be obliterated. Our AI does not know the difference between a party and a conference table. This beautiful example, somebody...
the racist Google, you mean?
Racist Google, yeah. When Google was working on their AI for photo recognition so that it could give you suggested similar photos, somebody took a look at the raw data, you know, kind of looking, making a human test of the results. And the AI was working on defining party based on photos that have been tagged or described as a party. And they found out that the AI was accidentally racist because all the pictures it amalgamated for its definition were white people. So instead of it was ignoring pictures of Asian and Black people having a party that was obviously a party, and including any gathering of white people around a table, so you would get like a business meeting.
Oh my God.
And so the reason this comes back to what we were talking about is because of Zuck and his love of AI.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, Instagram is really not patrolled by humans anymore. It's patrolled by AI.
No, absolutely not. You're spot on. And the AI cannot distinguish between, you know, what is art in terms of, you know, like if you post a nude photo or something, or a photographer posts a nude and it's meant to be art versus porn.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that algorithm, those were what we used to call algorithm, which is now
pure AIs.
AI. Exactly. I think that's probably what's most responsible for obliterating your Instagrams.
Yeah. When it was responsible for obliterating photos, you could just very easily contest it. And then a human would look at the photo and go, oh no, okay, the AI fucked up. The funniest one was always a very tight close-up of like toe cleavage would immediately get flagged by the AI because they thought it was a crotch shot.
Oh my God.
And then you would, so what happens is because of the Instagram, you know, you could do a big tile, like 9 pictures that would show up as one big tile picture.
Yep.
If you're doing a foot close-up like that, you know, the one that came in between the toes on one frame, that would immediately get flagged. And everyone I know who tried that got flagged. And then you could very easily on a picture just say, I want to challenge this. And like a human would look at it real quick and go, no, dumb bot. That's not what that is.
Yeah. And I don't think that human interaction exists anymore.
When you do put in a report of somebody, like if you try to report somebody we do it all the time for the child porn accounts. We're like, no, we're not going to have this in our community. You get the message almost immediately. You know, our bots are reviewing this, or they don't say bots, but they say bots. Because we're experiencing high volume and, you know, this might not get to human attention anytime soon. It's like, okay.
Yeah, the complete and utter lack of human interaction into these platforms is extremely problematic. And in fact, it's what, you know, I don't like politics very much, and I don't want to veer off too far away from what we're talking about, but one could blame the bots. One should blame the bots for all that disinformation, all that oversaturation of disinformation that just kept sort of permeating social media platforms during the previous election. that shit is just dangerous. It's dangerous that there aren't human hands in it. And I'm reminded of, you know, remember War Games back to the 80s? All the nuclear missiles were being controlled by a computer that was running game simulations, right? And they took all the human interaction away from controlling, at least the premise of the film is taking the human interaction away from nuclear war, because the bots would be better suited to select targets. It all went to shit.
The concept in literature goes back forever. The biggest person warning us against AI is Isaac Asimov. Well, actually, he is an accomplished astronomer as well as being a science fiction author. He is both. It's not like we're taking a political stance from, say, Stephen King.
Yes.
Asimov is knowledgeable. But yeah, that concept that eventually, you know, for efficiency, the human element is going to be taken out because the computer can do it at a billion times the speed with a billion times the errors.
Yes, exactly.
So now we're dealing with an AI that's allowed to decide whether we will call it art. You know, Instagram is primarily photographic and now videographic platform. So in a sense, everything there is art. And deciding what of our art is sensual versus sexual.
Mm-hmm.
And an AI to make that distinction. And maybe it does okay with, because as we said, the AI can only deal with things within the patterns of the input it's taken.
Right.
So the vanilla world is going to be 89.5% of the input. So maybe the bot's getting okay with tits and ass for art versus for porn. It has no fucking clue when you throw feet into the world.
Yeah. It's
no freaking clue when you throw bondage into the world. And so accounts that are posting fully dressed women from the hips down, showing off their feet, dangling a shoe, somehow the bot knows there's a sexual component in there, but it doesn't know how to put the line between sensual and sexual.
Right.
Go to the pages showing heavy bondage. It doesn't even know what it's looking at.
Yeah.
I think that's a picture of a fence for all it's aware of.
Exactly. And that's where the human interaction, you know, for these social media platforms is desperately needed, because I'm sorry, but to me, the internet in all its forms and splendor has always been a massive tool for us all to share any facet of our life that we want to share, and we want to do it unobstructed. And the monetization and the Zuckerberg-esque mindset where everything we put out there is no longer ours. It no longer belongs to us. I have no problem sharing, you know, everything I am with the world, with, you know, for example, with my Twitter followers, etc. I don't have anything to hide in that arena, but it's still mine. It's still mine. And I don't want AI deciding, you know, what's mine and what's not, what they can take away, what words are not okay. You know, in its basic form, in its simplest form, the AI is basically censorship. It's censorship on a massive scale.
I was trying to think in terms of the fact that it wasn't, because it's not, you know, it's not censorship as we kind of know it throughout American history,
mm-hmm.
and world history, has to do with somebody in power has defined a concept as unspeakable, and therefore, you know, whether it be on the small scale, this network, this, the oldest is this ad sponsor has said you can't say this, and therefore the network would say you can't say this, and therefore it wouldn't make it to television. So I always think of censorship as having somebody's political motivation at the top end of it. Now it's a political motivation gave an unthinking, unfeeling computer the right to make these decisions, but they're not being made. The computer doesn't have a political bent. The computer just has all authority and no purpose.
I think the purpose underneath, you know, what these bots do, what they take away and what they perpetuate. And call me a conspiracy theorist, it's okay. At the end of the day, it's what's lining the creator's pocket. The content that is released en masse versus the contact, you know, the content that's retracted, maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's the content that isn't generating the most profitability. I do think that the AI has, sure, it has no feelings, it has no thoughts, it has whatever it's programmed to have, but somewhere in there, somewhere in that programming is,
you know, somebody's intention.
Somebody's intent, exactly. And the intent, of course, with any corporation, and let's make no mistake, social media, they're all corporations, is to generate profits. Yeah. On mass scale.
We'll look at one that's not very, not the biggest social media platform out there whatsoever.
Please don't say 4chan. I said, please don't say 4chan.
No, no, Pinterest.
Oh, yeah.
What Pinterest allows that is their entire business model. Because for the most part, Pinterest is somebody has posted something and somewhere on the internet and you bring it over and you pin it. So there's almost no independent creation of content there.
Right.
What Pinterest has done is they have linking backlinking.
Yes.
That's old concept internet where, you know, I link to you from me, I see you. And linking with backlinking is literally a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a lot of your goofy little internet tabloids and clickbait kind of websites scouring Pinterest instead of going to like a good media or go to Getty Images. They just scour Pinterest because Pinterest completely allows it. And Pinterest, everybody makes a little bit on the clicks here, there, and backward and forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's the micro monetization for Pinterest, is that sort of micro ad revenue when, you know, InStyle magazine, or as we spoke of, it was Style magazine from last week's thing. Every one of the pictures that they put up as they defined, you know, what was an attractive celebrity foot were all backlinked to Pinterest.
Wow.
So
that's interesting.
Because Pinterest makes it easy. But yeah, the other companies are getting involved in that as well. And the bots are looking for to promote the things that outside entities are going to want to use and cut away the chaff that is going to turn outside entities away from it.
Yeah.
And so we have a thriving foot fetish community on Instagram, including many pages that specify that focus in on celebrity feet, but they go to Pinterest because it's just easier. And Zuck, like I said, Zuck either wants to assimilate it or destroy it.
Yeah.
He's now working in that direction, but his bots don't think that the foot fetish community is bringing anything into his pocket. And worse, the American dream, everyone wants to make a buck. Everybody knows or has this crazy idea that if you've got a halfway decent pair of feet, you can make $1 million off them. Some people have, most people don't. But Zuck can't make $1 million off the pretty feet showing up on my page.
Right.
Your feet on your Twitter page can't be, Elon Musk can't make money on that. But they can for something else. So they're going to promote the things that they can basically resell. And the resale is so silent and quiet and not really negotiated. It's just all because it's microtransactions.
Yeah, and to me, it's so sinister I don't know. There's something really sinister about all of it. I'm of the mind that all of it's okay or none of it's okay. And that's in terms of, you know, speech. Art, to me, they're one in the same. Like I said, you used to get shadow banned from Twitter for writing the word cunt, which is common enough a word. It's you know, as as I understand it, in the UK, it's not even considered that bad of a cuss word.
No, it's the term you might use for your mate who's being a complete jerk.
Right. And it's just a word. It doesn't mean anything. There's no intent.
Don't be such a cunt, have another pint. I mean, bingo. That's not.
Bingo. And, you know, these words would get you shadow banned or banned altogether. And to me, it's just, come on, you know.
And while a lot of us might have cheered when Donald Trump lost his Twitter page because it was just amusing because he was such a blowhard, in the end, yeah, he's allowed his speech too. Where it got dangerous in the Trump administration, the Trump election, and social media was the information wars, where things got represented as fact that were coming from nefarious sources.
Right. And trust me, I don't have any love for Donald Trump. I don't have any love for most politicians, but I have a love of free speech. And
it's either all okay or none of it's okay.
Right.
And how you put it.
I don't think that Twitter banning Trump, right, was a smart decision. And I don't support the guy.
Bans are not a smart decision. Freedom of speech, not freedom from ramification. But if the ramification of your speech is having your speech muted, that's not right.
Right, because
the ramification of bad speech is you declare that you're going to a Nazi rally in Hyde Park, and I come out to Hyde Park and I punch you in the face.
Right, and everybody was sort of arguing, well, Twitter's a private company, Facebook's a private company. Like, they're not. They're publicly traded.
And they made themselves, they pushed so hard to make themselves the new public domain.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want any corporation, if we're going to say that they're private corporate, I don't want any fucking private corporation telling me how to think or what I can say and what I can't, you know.
Because then you do start seeking out the platforms that fit your style of thought only.
Right. And then you become an echo chamber unto yourself. And that is the absolute worst thing for just for the human brain. Right. Mm. And you and I are members of a community that is very open-minded, that is all about the exchange of free thoughts and free ideas. You know, I don't want to have to dive into some sort of private dark hole.
No.
Our kinks and stuff like that, because
where FetLife looks like it might be that there is, fetish is such a broad and grand term, and there is so much exchange of ideas. In fact, loud and angry exchange of ideas and disagreement there.
It's
as small as you can get.
Right. And I happen to be one of those people that thinks that even if it's a loud banging exchange of ideas, there has to, you know, we need that. Discourse is more than appropriate. We need to get back to that, because it kind of scared me. You know, you remember, obviously, you remember when Trump won and everybody was sort of, for a hot minute, everybody sort of clutched their pearls and drew their breath back because we were in absolute awe. And then, you know, within about 48 hours of him winning the election, most of the liberals, okay, most of the free-thinking, freedom-loving folk, you know, within our community, drew a very powerful line in the sand, and they axed all their friends that voted for Twitter. They didn't want to talk to them.
Voted for Trump, you mean, not Twitter.
I'm sorry, voting for Trump. I got Twitter on the brain.
Twitter on the brain. Yeah,
yeah. I'm sorry.
Your world.
Yeah, I know, right? So they're like, if you voted for Trump, I don't want to have anything to fucking do with you. I'm gonna block you. I'm gonna report you, and that is exactly how you ruin every fucking thing. We have to talk about these difficult things. We have to, and that includes what we're talking about right now, the AI having such power over our thoughts and our content. Hey, come on, you know, we have to be able to come to the table. It's okay if we don't agree. It's not okay if we never have the conversation.
Well, so I don't want to bring it back to the point that we're bashing on the millennials, because we're really not. But it is definitely a difference in the thought process of the millennials versus the Xers, where, yes, the millennials are getting much more politically involved than the Xers ever wanted to. We are definitely a bit anarchy and apathy mixed.
Yeah.
And they were the burn or bust, but the problem was the or bust.
Yeah.
They're the ones that I would say more fit your, oh, well, yeah, you didn't do what we thought needed to be done, so we're just going to take our ball and go home. The X generation, we're the punk generation. We're used to discourse and fighting, whether it be verbal or literally punching people in the face. You know, the my era of punk had opposing sides of skinheads, you know, who were punk or Nazi punk. We were all listening to the same albums. We were all dressing the same. To everybody else, we were the same culture, and to each other, we were mortal enemies.
Right. And we didn't have that, you know, what we didn't have that sort of enforced the fact that we have constant discourse and confrontation was we didn't have the internet yet. We weren't globally connected on this unbelievable scale. And we had nothing to hide behind. You know,
you didn't pick up a telephone to have a political discourse with somebody. No. That happened in the street, in the bar, in the club, in the school, you know, depending on your age, in the arcade. It happened face to face. We didn't fear face to face contact.
Yeah. And I think
the anonymity of the internet. I absolutely do. It allows a little bit, maybe it allows a little bit of shaping a persona.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a great place to share feelings, values, ideas, thoughts. Maybe these aren't the thoughts that you could share with the coworkers. These are the thoughts that you can share hiding behind a little bit of internet blindness. You can come out and say it more easily. Here's a beautiful pair of feet. Look at this bondage picture. Oh my God, I want my ass spanked like that person just did.
Easier
to do that.
And
with a mask over your face.
Right. And you're referring to something, you know, you're referring to something that has a degree of intimacy to it, you know, in terms of our sexuality and the things that we like, right? There is a degree of intimacy about that. There's a degree of it that we don't share with the entire world. I'm a little different. I put it all the fuck out there.
We created a new universe where we do share it with the entire world, but we share it with anonymously to an anonymous world.
Right.
And it's greatly empowering of everyone's sexuality. It absolutely is. You know, you wouldn't believe how many foot fetishists are out there. You know, they used to say that we were like 4% of the population. The new numbers are like 80% of the population and 24% of the gay population. We're huge.
I know. And, you know, I always find it fascinating that still, you know, in the Twitter circles that I run in and the folks that I talk to of, you know, certainly of all ages, it's amazing to me how many people are into it, but stay so quiet about it. There is some sort of, they feel like there's some sort of stigma on it. So what I try to do, you know, at least in terms of feet, okay, because my partners love my feet. Oh, they do. And thank God for that. No, what I try to do is I try to present it in a different way. Like there was a woman that had commented on a foot photo that I'd posted not too long ago. And she was like, ew, feet, you know, I don't want anybody to, I'm like, well, that's because, you know, you're looking at it maybe the wrong way. Try to imagine the man you love or the woman you love or the partner you love, you know, delicately cradling and, you know, damn near worshiping the part of your body that carries you through all of life, right? that works relentlessly morning, noon, and night, literally walking you through life. And they are treating your feet in such a manner that it almost feels worshipful. I'm like, try to look at it at that in from that perspective. And the light bulb went on in her head. She's like, I never thought of it that way. She's like, I'm on my feet 24/7. I'm a nurse. And wow, I would love to receive that kind of affection. So that's what I try to do, is take.
That's perfect. That's the mission statement of why we have this podcast. You know, let's normalize it. Let's get people to understand, you know, maybe the podcast isn't the best vehicle for picking up every one of the straights who doesn't understand it, but you know, the ones who are enough to be curious to search for something, get here and learn more.
Right. It's discourse.
Is discourse. And I think that was the point that I was trying to make, that I like the public anonymous. I do. I think it's a good way for a lot of people to express what they're about and see that other people are about it too. What I don't like is that, you know, when discourse happened face to face, you stood by the courage of the convictions of your words.
Yes.
And you took that situation, turned it into what we'd call a teaching moment, and did beautifully with it. But sometimes it's just the trolls, and the trolls are empowered by the masks we all wear on the internet too.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And that's, you know, that the trolling, that's a whole other level of the downside. That's part of the downside of the internet. Like I think we were saying, when you were talking about that Style article, when we were not on the mics at that moment, you know, the person that was making the commentary about the feet, like he was just deciding, well, this is nice and that's not, and da 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 da. You take the bad with the good. Like what you see that he likes is not necessarily what you. I'm sorry. I'm like losing my train of thought. But
the biggest problem with that article is he was not a foot fetishist. He was
exactly.
He was an SEO specialist. You know,
Yes. Yes.
He was just trying to optimize the word count and keywords to make an article hit and be clickbaitable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But plus side, he's putting that in his run of the mill, random tabloidy website. He's not hiding it.
Yeah. That's a step in the right direction. Whatever his intention was behind creating the article, just like you said, maybe it's generating some sort of profitability. The point is, it's normalizing what should already be normal. It's putting in a very vanilla publication, it's putting something that, you know, is generally thought of as something kinky right out there into the face of the vanilla world. And I think that's the greatest gift we got, Gen Xers got from the punk generation, you know, us being the punk generation. We just put shit in your face and you had to deal with it. You couldn't hide from it. And I think, you know, when we talk about the millennials and Gen X the millennials and Gen Z and Gen Y, I think the closest that I've seen that they've come to really feeling that confrontation, we can look at like the Black Lives Matter movement, where they quite literally had to fight, right? They had to confront authority in the streets.
To think that there was a back row of some elder Xers telling them how it was done.
Yes. And I was reminded of Stonewall. Right.
Yes, that's the Xers, and even
exactly
what would become terrifyingly, they would have become the yuppie generation, but at the time they were still the '60s counterculture.
Yeah, and that's the gift of discourse. That's why I feel like silencing someone like fucking Donald Trump, as much as he's a piece of shit, is a bad idea. Letting bots do our thinking for us, it's just a bad fucking idea. Because human beings were meant to come face to face and confront difficult things.
And so at the end of my Black Thursday, I cinched up the laces on my Converse. I tightened up the leather jacket and I said, nope, just making a new pitch. I can start at zero. I'm not letting the bots get me down.
Excellent. Excellent. And if I may give you a small suggestion from your friends over in the Twitterverse, what we love to see, I haven't seen a person down thumb this or ask a stupid question. We love Converse and fishnets. So hopefully all your listeners are listening and they'll share more pictures of their Converse high tops and fishnets, because that is a whole vibe unto itself.
It is. It's a good one too.
Yeah. And you know what I noticed, there is an ongoing and very fun war on Twitter between the Converse fans and the Vans fans. Yep. And it's never fucking ending. And it's amazing.
At its root, you know what that is? It's not the same cultures, but it is exactly the same thing. It's Biggie and Tupac again.
Yes, it
is.
It's
New York City punk. And LA surf, it's
and Converse this goes and right Vans. Back. Oh my gosh! See, like we were right back where we started, because this goes back to us that we were teenagers when Biggie and Tupac and the East Coast West Coast rivalry were going on. Everything old is new again. It's fucking rad. It's fucking rad.
It is, and you know what? We're gonna have to keep shining. So
definitely.
The brief plug of socials, and I'm going to have to include ourselves in it. So you, Twitter?
Oh, it's at Molly Cocktail.
Run together, all one word.
Run together, all one word.
So as I said, I'm back on the Instagram. Tops _ toes and hose. Nod to the original page. And of course, for podcast listeners and information about the podcast myself, that would be toptoes_OTT. Annie, same day, decided to finally, after losing her pages, she came back too. I believe it is Annie_cutie_Roman_4. We're all back. We're all going to keep fighting.
Got it. Yeah. This is the what is that quote?
Oh,
this
yes.
is the moment
do
that
not,
punk rock.
Do not despair. This is the moment that Joe Strummer trained you for.
Boom. That's right.
Thank you so much for pinch hitting today, coming on.
You're so welcome. I love coming here.
Social media is your wheelhouse for sure. Kept us, and helped us describe what's going on, because this is about a whole change in the social media on top of a whole political change. And, you know, yeah, let's fight it. Let's not give up.
Yes. Damn the man, save the empire.
Thanks again so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, as always, to all of our listeners. We do this for you, and we're always glad when you tune in. We're always happy to hear your comments and feedback. And, Molly Cocktail's got a great voice there, too. So for those of you who are masturbating to our voices this whole time,
oof.
You're welcome. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.